Hi, I'm Christy Hurt, the founder of The Collab. We are a collective of brand professionals sharing our career stories. Every week, we pair up two members and they interview each other, so you'll get to hear one episode this week and one next week. You can join us too. Sign up at jointhecollab.com and then tell your story.
Hello and welcome to the Collab podcast, everyone. I am Elizabeth Powers and I am joined today by Mitali Banerjee. Mitali has had an illustrious career in luxury brands and now works in her role as head of creative strategy at Del Blue. And I can't wait for you to tell us more about that and more about your luxury brand experience. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
I want you to give us a little bit more background. I know you have an extensive background in very impressive luxury brands. So I want you to tell me a little bit more about that. But I'm happy to have you here today. And let's hear a little bit more about what you're doing at Del Blue and some of your luxury brand experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Collab and Elizabeth, for having me. I am the head of creative strategy at Del Blue. It's an internal creative agency to Dell Technologies. At Del Blue, we support all product launches, Dell, but also launch other initiatives related to sustainability, diversity, digital inclusion, as well as any other demand creation initiatives. So I have been very fortunate to be in this position to build this practice ground up. I was brought in to Del Blue to create the creative strategy practice and discipline, train the team, support my internal teams at Del Blue, but also externally at Dell Technologies, help them understand what I do and how I can bring value to the table and how we can all work together. It is a very large matrixed organization, so there are many strategists and voices and marketing experts. So a big portion of my role has been about building something ground up in tandem and partnership with those who are already there and leading their respective fields. So as I was describing to someone the other day, a whole lot of my role sort of looks like, you know, if you had a brain and you injected a balloon inside it and then, you know, you sort of filled it with air. So just as the balloon expands, there are other areas of the brain that have to contract a little to make space for it. And you have to sort of do it in a way that supports the brain and, you know, doesn't stop the train in the tracks per se. So that's basically my role. When it comes to creative strategy, I am my biggest partner and, you know, true supporter of my creative teams. They're the magicians that make the work shine and bring it to life. But they do need somebody who can translate product, messaging, field marketing into a strategy that's more audience-centric. And that's really my role at Del Blue. But I haven't always been a creative strategist by trade. I started my career as a media strategist at Louis Vuitton. And I, since then, have supported many luxury and beauty and fashion brands along the way in media, brand marketing, communications. And then I went on to the agency end of the business, supporting other brands, but also diversified to health, technology, food and beverage, thereby sort of becoming the person who ended up doing the firsts for a lot of my clients and brands. I'm a little wary of the word innovation because it's so overused and thrown around. It's innovation washing at this point. But call it test and learns, call it the first time a new product launch, the first time a healthcare brand introduced the first wearable device, the first time an iconic luxury brand was targeting millennials back in the day when millennials were a new thing, or very recently building this practice for the first time at an agency that never had it before. So I've sort of become the person who's built and created the firsts, led the firsts for iconic brands, balancing test and learns and innovations for brands that have a very strong brand identity and cannot really afford a lot of missteps when it comes to brand perception and brand image.
That sounds like a lot of work, a very impressive background and resume for you to bring to Del Blue. So I can certainly see why they brought you in. You likened your work to kind of, you know, brain surgery, where you have to sort of insert a balloon and blow it up carefully and make space for it without damaging any of the parts around it, which that analogy actually fits and aligns with my sort of intimidated view of your job, because I just think, goodness, I mean, to be responsible for innovation day in, day out, week after week, month after month, I personally would absolutely run out of ideas. And I think of myself as a pretty creative person. How are you constantly coming up with creative inspiration, and how are you able to constantly innovate? What's sort of your secret sauce?
I think a lot has to do with my personality. I, you know, sort of a type A personality who has to be super organized with things. But very early on in my career, I ended up being faced with a lot of challenges, visa challenges, challenges to sort of enter the industry on a footing where, you know, I didn't study here. So there were a lot of challenges that I faced right at the beginning of my career. And that sort of made me this very scrappy, flexible person who ended up combining the best of two worlds. One is organization and stay on top of skills, meeting the ability to pivot very quickly. And honestly, that's just made it very right for me to be in this space where, you know, with innovation, there are no right answers. There is a now answer, and then you have to pivot quickly to continue moving forward, learning along the way and charting the course. So it really helped for me to face those challenges early on and shape who I am as a professional being. The other thing is, when you talk about inspiration, there's obviously so much information out in the world, and we're really sort of blessed to be faced with influencers on LinkedIn, sort of thought leaders who continually, you know, talk about the big things and the trends that are happening. So staying in touch with those. But honestly, my biggest influence comes from consumers and people. I am in love with primary and secondary research. I love to hear what consumers are saying, but most importantly, what they're not saying. There is almost always this behavioral pattern that doesn't match with, you know, the direct questions we ask them in research, like, hey, do you like this? And their answer is yes. But then when they go to the store, they behave very differently and pick some other product. Why do they do that? What leads them to do that? Was it really just like picking a favorite color product because, say, my son likes this color and that has no real like functional benefit? But as marketers, we love to talk about functional benefits. So I love to get deeper into those layers of what people are not saying. And that's mostly where my inspiration comes from. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's a game-changing moment.
And I remember hearing you say that in a previous conversation that you and I had, and I've actually written it down a few different places, just the idea of understanding what people are not saying. It's so profound to me. And I love that the way your brain works, it's just kind of like a very simple, like, yeah, that's just my personality. And that's kind of what I realized is useful. And I'm like, that is so profound. And I mean, there's just so many different places I think we could dive into with that. But I love that idea. And I want to implement that in my own life, is noticing and recognizing and kind of understanding what are people not saying. Because, you know, it's true. I do the same thing. I'll think to myself, oh my gosh, when those shoes go on sale, I am absolutely buying them. And then they go on sale and I go, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to buy them. And I ask myself the same question, why did I do that? So I love that you are already there and finding those answers. And of course, I think at this point in my life, I have more friends who have been through the visa challenges than have not. And I think we could do an entire series on the lessons learned from that and just the tenacity it has to build within you in order to kind of survive that process. But I want to talk a little bit more about sort of your first time coming into an innovative project, because I know that for me, the hardest thing is kind of like where to begin, especially if it's a large project. And I mean, the things that you've worked on, whether it's in luxury brands or now with Dell products, I mean, these are massive products and, you know, there's a lot of risk for you, right? If you innovate something and it plays negatively to the market, especially for a luxury brand, you know, those failures can be extremely costly.
Right.
How do you get past that fear? And how do you even determine like where to begin to innovate on any particular product?
It's an excellent question. And I'll answer your second part first. So let's talk about where to begin. It's honestly the hardest part. It is really hard because having done this over and over again, a lot of the times what's understood at the start of a project is the objective or what we want to achieve. Why are we doing this in the first place? But when I get into the project, most times I will discover that we haven't really hit the nail on the objective or what makes this a success. The hardest part is actually educating the leaders on this. If this is an innovative initiative, if it's a test and learn, the intent is not to lead to business results in the first go. The intent is to learn. And to shift that mindset is the hardest because I have to sort of continue to drive the conversation about how other initiatives have been successful, but also innovation has a cost. Sometimes when we don't do this right, there is a lot of cost, and we don't want to undermine that initiative by saying, oh, it did not achieve the 2% market share increase that we needed to do. But we learned a lot along the way, and that will help us avoid a future crisis like we talked about in the future. So that is shifting the mindset is sort of the first place that I do start. But the other part is also asking a ton of questions and continuing to critically think through some of the things that I'm hearing. At times, there are big, bold ambitions about, you know, sort of revamping a CRM system and using machine learning to really make it hyper-personalized. This was something that we did as a pilot in like 2015 or 14, I must say. And it was a very costly pilot, but, you know, the return on investment was very little. And the objective at the start of it was, this is going to be the business impact. But the hardest part was we didn't really make an impact, but we learned a lot about the audiences along the way that shifted the way they did product evolution roadmaps, that shifted the way they did marketing for other personalized communications, and just, you know, their campaign in general. So there was a lot of learning that led to indirect benefits and business impact. But those are the critical thinking parameters that I have to deploy at the start of the project to sort of give it shape. And that is the part that is probably the hardest. When it comes to fear, which is your second part of the question, it is high risk. It's extremely high risk to try and do something for the first time. And there is, most likely than not, a lot of resistance from people who have done it the same way over and over again for a very long time. Those people are often in charge of innovation projects, and that mindset is hard to change because there is so much success and data to rely on that something as new and unchartered, like doing it for the first time, scares people. The only way that I have found successful, and I would actually love to speak to leaders who do this over and over again, what I find successful is building a lot of authentic relationships with cross-functional teams. There are people who are experts in their own field that are right in the organization who've done something before, not in the same capacity, but maybe they tried it and have some learning. And I love to have those open-ended conversations because having learned from those different people, I bring together a map of learnings that the company already has, which helps me figure out that, okay, we're going to take this innovative approach, but there are these risks that we can circumvent because we know this already. It was just that either those experts were not on the table or that it wasn't deemed that learning was relevant. But it's relevant to me when I start thinking of an innovation roadmap. So that's exactly how I've sort of looked at mitigating some of the risks. And the only other thing that has really worked is a mindset of pivoting quickly. Sometimes, or most times I would say, there are moments of pivot that show very clearly, but if we're trying to latch on to the original objective too hard, we kind of miss them. And maybe it's just having faced those challenges early on that I always enter one of these innovation moments knowing that, you know, there'll be a lot of shifts. So if I'm prepared for it, it allows me to see these moments of pivot more clearly.
I love that you're able to recognize that there is so much value in what you learn about the product and the audience. I love that you're able to communicate the value of learning, even if the project may have been viewed by some of the participants or your leadership team as a failed project because it didn't necessarily meet the original objective that you had for it, but you're still able to see the learning and value the learning, whether it's about the product or the audience. And you mentioned, you know, the importance of being able to pivot. So when it's clear that the original objective or plan is not working for you, it's easier for you, or it's important for you to be able to pivot and kind of take it in a different direction so that you can still salvage it and have some success from it. But I know that when you're constantly innovating and you're given a brand new product that you need to do some work on, your initial sort of your starting point is to ask a lot of questions, come in with a lot of critical thinking, a lot of why are we doing it that way? Why do we think it will be used in that way? Why do we think this particular audience will pay this much for it? I imagine that there's a good bit of pushback, especially if people feel like maybe they're being interrogated or their authority or decisions are being questioned. Have you dealt with that much in your career? And if so, how do you kind of get beyond that and get back into a teamwork mindset with everyone?
Absolutely. And yes, you're absolutely right. There is a lot of pushback that I've received. I believe that's probably because innovation or first time test and learn initiatives are sort of separated from the rest of the company. Maybe it benefits organizationally, but it does make it feel a little bit separated from the rest of the organization. And that makes it very hard for those people leading that first time initiative to reach across the board and get people on board with their initiative. The things that have worked for me in order to help sort of get that pushback, that hesitation handled is by building very authentic relationships across the board. I'm very interested in understanding how some of these leaders who've been at the company for very long have, you know, dealt with issues. What's been on brand? Have there been any brands faux pas in the past that we should avoid? This is the innovation we're trying to do. What is your perspective? Having to build those relationships and make it a collective exercise, bringing those people who are hesitant into the fold to have a say in some of the directions really helps make it more of a collaborative zone. The other part is because I'm able to build those trust-based relationships, it's also easier for me to get them to speak up when they feel like something's going off. So they're not only the ones who have an input role, but sometimes they also become advisors along the way. That sort of makes this innovation exercise, this first time exercise, a lot more success. Especially for luxury brands, iconic brands, there are always experts on the table who are so intimately connected to the brand and what's happening next and the future of it, that it's very enlightening to be a part of that story and bring that back into the innovation fold. So it doesn't seem like innovation or the first time initiative is just a tactic. It starts to become more in the fold of the brand DNA. And that's the part that I love to do and, you know, sort of deal with the hesitation that comes when innovation is first introduced to an organization.
I love that. What I really hear in all of that is, you know, you come in and you use a humble approach with an authentic desire to learn from each of the people you're working with and, you know, the teams that are impacted by what you're doing. And I think there is so much wisdom in that. Another little thing I'm going to write down and put everywhere to learn from you. So I know that we are very close to time. I want to ask you about I think that we are in a job market and we probably have a lot of folks in the audience that are recently laid off and looking for work. And I think we're all learning probably the hard way that one of the most important things about career growth is networking. And I've kind of heard through the grapevine that you've done amazing networking throughout your career. So do you have any tips for kind of building genuine connections, whether it's within a specific industry or just connections across the professional lifetime?
Such a wonderful question and so timely, right? Because it's sort of the ask of the hour. AI is really helping, you know, with our resumes, but the fun part is AI is helping everybody with their resumes. So while it gives us a reason to stand out, it also evens the playing field. So it's very hard to stand out in this market right now, even more so than it was before. And honestly, we call it networking, but again, I would say that I've never really tried to network. What I have really done is built connections along the way. I've found that a lot of my connections are not necessarily related to just the work things, but you know, getting to know people beyond who they are and what their lives are and their passion points. I've connected with people on, you know, our mutual love for wine and that we wanted to do a business idea together in the future on wine. And we just stay connected in the industry for the same reason, or that we are parents and we exchange notes on, you know, other parenting advice and things that help our kids sleep, or alternatively, like dog lovers. That there are so many facets to people, and having common interests helps stay connected to them. And I feel like I've never gone in with the intention to network, but maybe that's probably worked for me, is to understand people at a deeper level and what motivates them. And the other part is I'm almost always helping people build other connections. If I have been in touch with somebody who's a mentor and is fantastic in a certain field, and I know somebody else in the market who does it, I almost never hesitate to say, hey, I thought you guys could connect at this level. When I spoke to this person, it reminded me of you. I know you're really busy, but when you have a moment, I'd love if he or she could reach out to you just so you guys can connect. And sort of 9 out of 10 times, almost everybody says, absolutely, I would love to connect with that person. And it sort of comes from a personal recommendation. And I do that a lot often. And I feel like what comes around goes around comes around. Sometimes people do that to me. And that's probably what's also benefited for me in my career, is having to like make the right connections and have the right mentors to help me grow in my career. So it's sort of a symbiotic relationship, but with not the intention of moving in the career. It's just about, I'm really inspired by this person. I bet you guys could have a really good conversation.
I love that your kind of overall message really is kind of leading with authenticity, even when it comes to networking. And I think approaching it that way actually takes all of the kind of icky part of it out, where you kind of feel like you have to be fake and you have to, you know, put on a very professional voice and pretend you love their industry. It's like, no, you can just say, hey, I love dogs. You have a dog. Let's network about dogs. And that can be a connection that becomes useful in your career down the line. And it's a connection that probably lives longer and has a much more beautiful life because it's built on authenticity. And I think in a world where, yeah, everybody's using AI and computers to generate so much of what we see and consume, that authenticity becomes so much more important. Well, Mitali, I have really enjoyed our conversation. I know for a fact we will have plenty of people in our audience that will want to connect with you and continue to follow your career. Where can we find you online?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad we got to speak. You had such wonderful questions. And you know, it's that I'm walking out of this chat feeling so rejuvenated. So thank you for that. For those who are interested in finding me, I'm on LinkedIn, Mitali Banerjee. It's Banerjee. You can follow me on Instagram, Mitali.Banerjee. I'd love to hear from you and, you know, connect with you about dogs and wine and books and just the love for luxury and anything else. But it would be lovely for anyone who's interested in any advice related to visas as well, because I know we're far and few in between. So please reach out. Love to hear from you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Mitali.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much for being here for the CoLab Career Stories podcast. Please follow us on social media at Join the CoLab and sign up to become a member and share your story at jointhecolab.com.